everybody, and welcome to Adjusted. I'm your host, Greg Hamlin, coming at you from beautiful Birmingham, Alabama. And with me is my co-host for the day, Matt Yaling. Matt, do you want to introduce yourself for everyone?
Hello, this is Matthew Yaling with Midwest Employers Casualty. I'm joining you from St. Louis, Missouri, along the banks of the mighty Mississippi.
Always glad to have you, Matt. We've done a number of these and definitely excited for this guest. We have with us today Dr. Alex Korb, PhD and neuroscientist and author of the book Upward Spiral. Alex, if you want to introduce yourself to our guest, that'd be awesome.
Hi, yeah, I'm a neuroscientist and anxiety coach as well, but I teach at UCLA. And in my coaching practice, I help smart, purpose-driven professionals get past unnecessary anxiety and mood issues. But yeah, I'm excited to talk with you today about neuroscience. And I'm right by the banks of the not so mighty LA River.
Is there any water in that?
There's a trickle, although I'm told, I read an article that when the LA River is full at max capacity, it's so efficient at getting water out that it actually can carry as much water as the Mississippi at St. Louis.
All right.
So
hopefully you get to see that soon enough.
Brent, yeah. We had the atmospheric river, so it was impressive to see the water flowing at 20 miles an hour. But yeah, maybe that's probably another podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, we're excited to have you because we talk about and nerd out on workers' comp issues all the time. And we talked a little before we started recording about why we would have you on this podcast. And with injured employees, there's so much that goes on right before the injury, after the injury, and the recovery. And you know, we're interested in getting people the best outcome, the best result, and getting them back to a functional lifespan. So, you know, having you and hearing a little about the neuroscience of anxiety and stress and depression and all that, and then the 8 steps you've outlined in your book of how to overcome that. So I'm excited. It's kind of good to geek out on a different topic than our typical, you know, workers' compensation type topics. But this really, I believe, impacts our injured employee population. And I'm excited to have this conversation. So
I couldn't agree more, Matt. I feel very much the same way. We, you know, with so many of our injured workers, they're going through something really hard. And when they go through something really hard like that, we tend to focus on the physical side of what's wrong and what we need to do to help them recover. But there certainly is a lot of anxiety that is attached to not being able to go back to your work, trying to worry about how you're going to pay your bills, thinking about if you were really hurt, what your life might look like afterwards. So all of those things, I think we both have seen really lead and impact how people recover. So this is going to be a fun one. Normally, Alex, we ask people how they got into the insurance industry. You're actually on a different path, but I would really love to know, like when you were young in kindergarten for career day, did you like show up and say, I am going to be a neuroscientist?
No, I think my childhood dream was to be a writer. And it's funny now because then I did neuroscience and people, and then I wrote a, you know, a book about neuroscience. People were like, so that was like, it's so obvious, like you did that intentionally. And I was like, well, no, I like always liked writing. But I also always liked science and like understanding things, but they're just like two separate things. And then like, it wasn't until after getting a PhD that I was like, maybe I should like write about the neuroscience stuff that I think is interesting. But yeah, I've always been fascinated by science. And I think I'm someone who, you know, is maybe more on the anxious side of things, or rather I was a lot more anxious when I was a kid, though I wouldn't have described it that way. I would have said, oh no, like I just get a lot of, you know, stomach aches. And in learning about neuroscience, I started to see like, oh, like the things that you're thinking about and like what is happening in your brain affects what's happening in your body and your pain and your digestion. And that was just fascinating. And I wanted to learn more about it. And I felt like the more I learned about it, the more I understood just about myself and what are the little things you can change to be happier and more productive? And what are the things that you can't really change because it just is part of having a human brain? So I've always been really inspired by that.
That's great. And the book, obviously, we've referenced is called The Upward Spiral. Wrote it a couple years ago. Yeah, it really gives, a path out, right? From the downward spiral. But, to start off, like, how does the brain get in that downward spiral? And then maybe we'll transition to the other way. So,
that's actually, I think, the most important place to start is like, why has this happened in the first place? Because a lot of times when people are stuck in anxiety or depression, part of the issue is that like, but this doesn't make any sense. And one of the first steps is like, no, it actually makes perfect sense based on how the brain works. So your brain is full of all of these different circuits that evolved at different times for different goals. You have habit circuit and a worry circuit and imagination circuit and decision-making circuit. And the function of each one is kind of like differs from person to person, just like any other traits. Some people are taller, some people are shorter. So some people, worry more, some people worry less. And one of the crucial things to understand is that there's nothing inherently better or worse about the activity of any particular circuit. Just like there's nothing inherently worse about being shorter, right? It might make it harder to dunk a basketball. Does that mean you can't be a good basketball player? Like, no, it just means maybe stop trying to dunk it and work on your three-pointer, your passing or whatever. Like, and so there are certain parts of our biology that that we can't change, but it's not any given feature. It's like how they all function together. And the reason why downward spirals happen is because the things that happen to us or the thoughts that pop into our head cause changes in the activity and chemistry of the brain. And based on your brain's particular sensitivities, well, then that can cause the worrying circuit to like trigger the habit circuit. And if you have good habits programmed in, then that's not a problem. It just resets. But like, if the worrying circuit activates the habit circuit, which causes you to be more indecisive and give you more to worry about, and that increases your anxiety because you're focusing on the things you can't control, and then you it all starts to, and you stop sleeping and you stop exercising, and it all starts to snowball out of control. And it feels like totally random, but it's actually like, no, these are brain processes, some of which you have control over and some of which you don't. It's just, the pieces you have control over, well, those are the things you should do something about. And I sort of like to describe the weather is the weather, but you can use your knowledge of the weather to decide, do I need an umbrella to like plan a trip or whatever? And the same is true of the human brain, that the brain is this dynamic system that because of how it's wired, like gets caught in these spirals and loops sometimes, but you can use the knowledge of that to actually create, a spiral in the other direction.
I love what you said there. And when I read the book, I think the thing that really stood out to me in this beginning part was just how when people start to feel these things, they start to cascade where perhaps maybe they're feeling depressed or they're feeling anxious. And so they don't want to get out of bed. But
right.
Because they're not getting out of bed, now they're not exercising. And those things then, instead of getting better, they're actually compounding on each other. If the behaviors that we have when we feel those things work that way, it can get a whole lot worse. You did a really good job in the book of explaining how the brain works on that. And I definitely am not a PhD. I'm a criminal justice major. So I'm going to leave that to you. But I thought maybe for our listeners, you could talk a little bit about like, how do the different parts of the brain work that causes these spirals?
Yeah, no, it's really a problem with how the thinking and the feeling then circuits in the brain are communicating with and regulating each other. And we can get technical. Like I like to be nerdy and be like, oh, well, you're talking about the prefrontal cortex and the limbic system, which contains the hippocampus and the amygdala and how those communicate with the dorsal striatum. But what's actually most important is to just not memorize the names of these things, but just recognize how they function. And based on, some people have action circuits that are, more impulsive than others. Some people like more routine than others. Some people's emotional circuitry is more reactive than others. And a lot of times we can look at how our brains are and be like, oh, that's where all my problems are. Like if I just wasn't so emotional, then that wouldn't trigger these habits and whatever. But like, there's nothing inherently worse about having a brain that is more emotional. It actually makes it, you be able to experience more joy and like connection with people. And also your emotions are telling you about things that are important to you. So you might look at someone else who's less than emotional and like, wow, that person, they can just trudge along in their boring life and it doesn't affect them. It's like, yeah, you should be affected sometimes by things that are important. It's just that some of those things you can't do anything about. So stop increasing the reactivity of your emotional circuitry by focusing on them. Instead, just, reframe or accept them. But other things you should take action on. And you can thank your emotional brain, like, oh, thank you so much for letting me know. And I should do something about that. But it's crucial to know, like, well, what are the things you can change about your brain and what you can't?
Yeah. So when we're dealing with an injured worker that's just had, an injury, Greg outlined, the compound effect, and you outlined that in your book. You even referenced, like, even for you, like, riding by yourself takes you away and makes you actually stressful. So you go out and you ride it. Yeah. Coffee shop. But you said, so you like being aware of that. So like when you're thrown into a situation, maybe like a car accident or a workers' compensation injury or something that's totally out of the blue, we see different responses, right? No two people are exactly the same, but we see different responses from different people. And some people, emerge from that similar injuries with two very different outcomes, right? Some people get stuck, and you talk about getting stuck in the book, and then some people emerge, and they're back to work and they're productive and, they go on. So it's like, we're trying to focus like on the stuck. So we're stuck here. We just got injured. We have this history. We have, maybe some genes that preclude us having a poor recovery or experiences or stresses and social, poor social support or luck, like you even called that out, so all that evolution of items and everything. So how would you, if you were talking to somebody and they were like, hey, I had this, all this happened, I feel like crap, I'm stuck, I'm depressed, what would you tell somebody, in that situation?
Yeah. Well, one of the first most important things is to acknowledge your emotions. Because sometimes like smart people can get in this habit of like, oh, well, I'm logical, I should be able to think through this and whatever. And like, yeah, logic is a really useful tool that the human brain evolved, but it's built on top of all these other parts of the brain. And particularly for certain things like happiness that is inherently emotional, you can't entirely logic your way to it. And so what happens a lot of times is people ignore their emotions because they think they're not relevant, and your brain is trying to tell you like, hey, buddy, like this is important and you're ignoring it. And then your brain sometimes is like, okay, fine. Like if you're not going to pay attention to me, I'm going to stop telling you about your emotions. You're going to start having migraines or headaches or chronic pain. Like our emotions don't go away simply because you ignore them. And one of the most powerful things to do is to acknowledge your emotions and that you have many emotions. I'm angry at myself for the mistakes I've made. I'm frustrated at how long this is taking. I'm worried where this is going to go. I'm excited that this might get better. I'm grateful for the progress I've made. Like we have many emotions. And so a lot of times we ignore all of them, or we try and say, no, but what's the one emotion I'm feeling? Am I feeling good or am I feeling bad? And like, that's like a chef trying to get better at cooking and be like, does this taste good? Does this taste bad? No, like you need some nuance. Like, oh, is this too salty? Is this too sweet? Like, understand your own emotional depth. So this awareness is the first piece. The second piece is validating your own emotional experience. Like, oh, it makes total sense why I'm frustrated and depressed. I normally go into work every day and I enjoy talking with my coworkers and being productive. But I know, oh, now I can't do any of that. Like, therefore, my current emotional reaction makes sense. And what often happens if people start to gain a little emotional awareness, they then trigger a habit of self-criticism, like, you idiot, why can't you just do this normally? You used to be able to do it, instead of realizing, like, right, your injury may have taken away things from your life that were very important to your well-being. And getting mad at yourself for that doesn't help that. Like, you still don't have those things. And now you also have to be mad at yourself. Again, this is people, I don't want to blame people though, because like sometimes people are like, oh, that's, I just need to stop being mad at myself. It's like, no, perfectly understandable why you are mad at yourself. And this isn't to say that you shouldn't be mad at yourself. It's that, oh, you are mad at yourself and that's okay. And you are grateful. And so our positive emotions and our negative emotions, like, don't have to do this cosmic battle against each other where it's like, well, am I grateful? And this is where people often get stuck. Like, well, I should be more grateful that it wasn't worse and that I have all these, my wife and all these other wonderful things. Like, okay, well, you probably are grateful for those things. That doesn't invalidate your emotions and your negative experience. And that's one of the reasons why I love talking about the neuroscience, because it helps you realize, like, oh, these things you're experiencing, like, yeah, that's a normal part of being human. When you come disconnected from your normal support network, or you aren't able to accomplish as much as you could before, like, yeah, it's totally normal and understandable to have these feelings. And on top of that, you may be having these unhelpful habits or ways of thinking about it that are making it worse or more difficult than it needs to be. That doesn't mean it is all in your head. The other reason I like talking about neuroscience is because it takes away some of the stigma about it. Like, it's nothing wrong with you. Like, this is just, oh, these brain circuits are functioning in this particular way. And like, my favorite analogy for that I describe in the book is with a microphone and a speaker. Like, if the volume on the speaker is turned up a little too high, oh, maybe someone bumped the speaker and the volume knob went up. Now your normal, you know, singing leads to this screeching feedback, but there's not something broken or wrong about the microphone and nothing broken about the speaker. They're working exactly as they're supposed to. Just the problem arises based on like the tuning. And it doesn't mean you need to say, stupid microphone. Like, no, well, you just need to turn down the volume on the speaker just a tiny bit, or maybe realize, like, I just need to stop shouting into it. And yeah, like that, hopefully some of that is helpful to realize like what is going on.
I think it's really helpful. I mean, especially like if I'm the adjuster talking to an injured employee, I think understanding some of that and realizing, you know, the situation the injured employee is equally as important, right? Like, to help somebody through this situation, the adjuster is really the ones, you know, working with the injured employee day to day, and having them understand like how the injured employee and understand like what they're processing and what they're thinking about, you know, that's very critical.
And I should add one thing is that particularly when your audience is, you know, more adjusters who are talking to these people, one of the wrong ways to go about it is to be like, I know all these things you should do. You should exercise more. You should do these things. And like, no, this is about, understanding and gaining insight for yourself. And so if you're talking about someone else, these are reasons to have more compassion for the other person for why it's so difficult. And this is why I wanted to talk about the neuroscience so much in the book, because my editor was like, stop talking so much about the brain. Just tell people, like, what can you do? What can you do? I'm like, well, the first thing is to start out with like understanding, like, oh, it makes sense why I'm in this situation. And so if you are talking to someone else, they are probably jumping past the part of awareness and validation. They're trying to like, oh, I'm trying to do this and I'm trying to do this and I'm going to get an MRI. And like, you can help them with that process. But usually it starts with like helping them realize that it's not their fault, to help them talk about their emotions. Like, oh, that must be really frustrating that the doctor is telling you there's nothing wrong with you, but you know you're in pain. But the way you interact with someone, you can get them to become aware of their emotions, and then you can help them validate their emotions, which are often the first step, instead of just saying, hey, you should do this and this. If they ask you, hey, what do you think I could do? Oh, then that's a totally different thing. But just don't start with telling them, because that's what, you know, everyone's already doing.
That's really important, I think, to really start right where you're talking about validating how injured workers feel. One of the things we did recently, the letters we used to send out when someone was hurt sounded like an attorney drafted them. And we went back and we restarted that. And now they start with, we understand you've been hurt in an injury at work, and being hurt is hard. And so we just start out acknowledging, like, from the very beginning, like, and I think that this is something that in general in the industry, we can do a better job of showing some empathy, because people are going through something really challenging. There's a pain coach I've worked with before, and she's told me the story, you know, normally by the time they go to a program like hers, they've been through so many different things. And a lot of times they're stuck in like the back room of their mother's house and they're not even getting out. And, you know, she was telling me some of the things she starts with is just simple goals that they have. And one of them was to get a t-shirt that had, I can't remember what their favorite band was, and like go into the living room and listen to it. It wasn't even anything that you would think would be like a great accomplishment, but it was like these slow steps were helping that person really just start to do some of the things you talk about in positive ways, rather than focus on, you know, all the things that have gone wrong over the last three years. So I think the acknowledgement part is really important. And then once we get there, what are some of the things either personally we can do in our own lives, or things that if you were going through this, you could do if you're one of our injured workers that would help?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the little things that you actually just mentioned is really helpful, which is to make small changes or set small goals, because sometimes we ignore our small goals. Like, I can put on a t-shirt, but like, what I really want to do is get back to work. But like, you can't accomplish the big goal. So therefore you just stress yourself out and do nothing, instead of like, well, it doesn't matter if the big goal is more important, if you can't do it. So focus on these small changes. I mean, the book, even in the subtitle, is like small changes. And also that's important because like big changes, any big change in your life, whether it is an injury or winning the lottery, like any big change causes stress. Mm-hmm. And so when you try and make a big change, you already have a big change, but you're trying to make a whole bunch of big changes in your life. Well, I'm trying to do this and this and this and this and this. Well, then your brain is going to resist. So if you just start small, it makes it feel more achievable, but you also don't add more stress. So setting small goals that are moving you in the right direction are infinitely better for you than these big, huge goals that you can't actually do or can't make progress on. Other simple steps involve, I mean, along those same lines, are like physical activity. A lot of times, and I use the word physical activity instead of exercise for a reason, because exercise has all these negative connotations of like things that you have to do that are unpleasant. And it forces people to often think about all the things they can't do or how unpleasant it is. So they'll, you know, I'm in pain, I can't exercise. We don't need to exercise. Just move your body some. So if you're on the couch and that's where you're at every day, okay, well, don't think about like trying to run a marathon, just like, okay, get up off the couch and walk around the block once. And if that's all you can do for a week, great. That's way better than sitting on the couch the entire day. And you also don't have to make that decision all at once. All you need to do is get up and put on your shoes and walk outside. You don't have to say, you don't have to force yourself to exercise, but by changing your environment, now you're wearing your shoes and you're standing outside. Well, if you really want it, you could go back inside to the couch. Or, well, you're already here, you might as well walk. And that's where sometimes we're like, well, I don't even, we're sitting on a couch and we're trying to work up the motivation to exercise instead of making just like little small change in our environment. So that's, those are just a few places to start. And I should, by the way, I should add, like even any little life change that you make has many effects, because like going on that little walk around the block accomplishes many things. One, some physical activity, which impacts the dopamine system, the serotonin system. Two, it's a small goal that you set for yourself that you can do. And that also increases motivation and releases dopamine. Three, now you're getting some sunlight, which also changes your brain's clock and improves sleep quality, and improved sleep quality reduces pain, so that, you know, tomorrow, well, you maybe have a little bit more energy because you're more rested. And so like, we often don't make these small changes because we're like, well, that's not going to fix everything. And it's like, yeah, but if you just make one little change, that'll probably have these other unintended, you know, or other add-on effects, and that'll change your brain, and then it'll make it a little bit easier tomorrow.
And now you've got better sleep. Now you have a, you know, better habit. You know, now you get into the biofeedback and you feel better.
Once you, because like people, they want to often like jump forward in the process, like it's any athletic skill. Like, I don't want to practice free throws. I just want to be a great free throw shooter. Well, how do you get there? Well, you don't start out there. It's okay to miss a bunch of free throws. Nothing wrong with that. Like, just keep going. Every single time you do it, you're building that pathway. So when people are trying to change their habits, like, oh, I'm trying to build a habit of, you know, getting at physical activity more, they often focus on the times when they forgot or they didn't have enough energy. Okay, that's fine. Like, to build a habit, you have to, it's not yet a habit. You just have to do it. And most of the time you'll forget about, okay. And then, but anytime you remember, you say, all right, I'm just going to keep doing that. And then each time you do it, you start to strengthen those connections, which makes it easier in the future. This is just how the brain works. And realizing that that's a process that takes time to become automatic is helpful. Just like if you were growing a plant and someone's like, hey, you know, plants need water and fertilizer. And you're like, okay, great. So I put my water and my fertilizer, and I come back the next day and stupid plant hasn't grown yet. Well, that's the point. I'm not going to stop. I'm going to stop watering it. And it's like, okay. Like, yes, that's a necessary component, but like, it also takes time. And so you just need to imagine that you're tending your brain like a plant. It's not going to have immediate results, or even like going to the gym, right? I want to look like The Rock. I want to bulk up. Okay. Well, the first few days you go to the gym, you probably don't look any different and you feel sore and you feel worse. But knowing how the biology works, well, if I keep doing that, then I'll feel better, I'll look better, whatever. Like, it's easier when we're talking about biology that we can see. It's harder when we're talking about things that we can't see, and because they're so abstract. And that's why I find it so helpful to talk about the neuroscience, because it makes it concrete. Like, wow, I didn't feel, you know, amazing after exercising today. But I know that it's having these effects on my brain, just like, you know, water and fertilizer. So I'm going to keep doing it. And then we start to see results.
Does that also help with, you know, so we're talking about loss prevention a lot in insurance too. So, you know, if I think about like my loss prevention hat, if I have these good behaviors, when the next disruption occurs, you know, the next time I sprain my ankle, is the recovery faster or is the disruption less? I've built these good, you know, these habits, these good mechanisms to kind of, you know, get me to a good baseline, or even, you know, out of that, my spiral is going up. You know, maybe I'm not at the top of the spiral. We're probably never at the top, right? But we have injured employees or loss prevention activities that kind of get us a better baseline. You know, I'm thinking the disruption doesn't sink me down. My spiral doesn't go down as far. I don't know. Is there any science to that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And some of the, a lot of things we were talking about are physical habits, like your exercise habits and your sleep habits. And those, if you're consistent about those, then yeah, it's less likely that you'll get stuck in a downward spiral. But one of the most important habits to get a handle on is self-criticism, because normally what happens for a lot of successful people, you know, if you got to where you are in some sense because you were critical of yourself, like in high school, you slacked off a little bit and you're like, you idiot, you need to focus and like do better on the test. And that helped because, you know, you're smart and talented and motivated and you just need a little kick in the butt to accomplish this thing. But it's also because the challenge you were facing wasn't insurmountable. And so a little self-criticism was helpful. And we often retain that habit over time. But now you're experiencing a situation where trying harder isn't necessarily helpful, or you don't have full control over the situation, which creates stress. And stress prompts us to do our old habits. And now this habit of self-criticism that, like, oh, maybe was helpful, or at least wasn't a problem for most of your life, now it's creating depression and demotivation and increased pain and all of this stuff. And if you can reprogram that habit of self-criticism, then absolutely you become more resilient to getting caught in these downward spirals in the first place. But that's hard to do. But a lot of the first step is realizing, oh, but it's useful, and it starts with mindfulness. And then what you start to do is, instead of trying to stop your habit of criticizing yourself, you just instead try to create a new habit of compassion.
I think that's great. And I think you're really hitting on something with self-awareness. You know, I think a lot of times the example I give is, there's been times I've driven to work and I don't even remember really getting in my car. I got halfway there and it's because I go that same route every day. I know exactly what I'm doing. I can be half asleep and I'll show up at my office and I'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, you know, I've gone down that path so many times and it's such a habit that I don't even think about it.
Watch out, Birmingham.
Yeah, right. But I have not been in an accident. So good news on that. But I think sometimes when we start talking about whether it's anxiety or depression, it's really easy if we have the habits that are taking us in a downward spiral to almost be like that drive to work. It's like you just start going down that path because you've driven that path so many times mm-hmm. that it's thinking of ways to redirect yourself without getting mad at yourself, you know, but knowing that you're like, you're on that path.
Right. Yeah.
One of the things you talked about in your book that I loved was just the importance of gratitude. And you even mentioned it earlier as being a factor. And it's sometimes hard to be grateful, or you know you should be grateful, but you know, obviously some things have happened that are causing you that anxiety or depression. How do you fit that in, or what are some thoughts on how to work through that so that you get the benefits that come with gratitude?
Yeah. Well, it's obviously always wonderful when we're like overcome with these like feelings of gratitude. But unfortunately, that's what people focus on too much, that, you know, I don't feel grateful at the moment. And they think that their goal is they need to change how they feel, that I should feel more grateful. Look at all these wonderful things in my life. I should feel more grateful. But that's not helpful, because however you feel is how you feel. And if now you're criticizing yourself for how you feel, well, that's not going to suddenly make you more grateful. Just like my height, I might be frustrated that I can't dunk a basketball. Okay, well, like my height is what it is. Like, can I get better at jumping? Maybe I can. Like, if maybe I can't get good enough, I should then start focusing on passing. or dribbling or defense or teamwork or whatever. The challenge, I think a lot of times also, is that we just think you're black or white. Like we think we have just one emotion. And a lot of times you have a lot of frustration and negative emotions that are obscuring your awareness of the gratitude that you already have. So a lot of times you are grateful. You're just not aware of it. Just like, you know, if you have a messy desk, like, well, your paper is here somewhere. You just can't see it. But the process of looking for it is really helpful. It's much more likely that you will find it. So when it comes to like wonderful things in your life, a lot of people are like, well, you know, yeah, I have a house and a nice, you know, and kids, and like, I should feel more grateful. Well, no, you actually are grateful for those things. Like, do you like that you have running water? If someone asked you about it, you'd be like, yes, I'm glad I have running water. Great. That's the first step. Like, yeah, it's not going to overwhelm you with feelings of gratitude unless, you know, you were just in a storm and the water got shut off for 3 days. We're like, oh, now we have running water. Oh, awesome. But your brain quickly habituate to whatever your circumstances are. And that's why it's very easy to take for granted all these wonderful things in our life. They don't automatically trigger emotions. But your goal is just to direct your attention to what those things are. Your brain's not going to automatically do it for you. So you can just think, oh, am I glad I have running water? Yeah, I am really glad. It's okay that it doesn't change my feelings. But the more that I become aware and focus on all of these things that I am grateful for, now suddenly they become a bigger part of my awareness. And these negative emotions don't quite seem so unmanageable. But people also get in their way because they're trying to figure out, well, what's the one thing that I'm feeling? Am I angry that this happened, or am I grateful that it's not worse? You are both of those things. If the anger helps you take action to, you know, speak up to management or sue, whatever, great. It's good that you're angry. If the gratitude helps you enjoy your life and appreciate the things you have, then great. It's good. You're grateful. But like, you don't need to have those things do battle against each other. And it almost always becomes a problem when we start using the word should. Like, get a more nuanced and complex understanding of all the things that you are feeling.
So I tell my kids in the morning, and maybe I'm doing it wrong, but I say, if you act enthusiastic, you will feel enthusiastic, right? And I have a friend that kind of says that. So I kind of picked it up from him and I said, you know, there's some truth here. Like, you act enthusiastic, you will feel enthusiastic. And, you know, it's said otherwise, right? Like, almost fake it till you make it. Is there neurological truth to that?
Yes, there is biological truth to that being helpful and that being a problem. So the reason why like fake it till you make it is helpful is like, you know, I don't feel like exercising. Okay, well, if I felt like exercising, like what would I do? Well, I'd probably exercise. Oh, well, so then you start changing your actions. You don't let the fact that you're feeling a certain way dictate all of your actions. Well, I don't really feel like being social. So then I isolate myself and I don't feel. So then we, you know, the emotions trigger our actions and send us in a downward spiral. So you can break that by saying like, oh, it's okay, but I don't feel that way. Like you don't need to feel like connecting with someone in order to just dial, you know, a friend on the phone. Like one is a feeling, one is an action. We don't let ourselves take action until we feel a certain way, then we are putting an unnecessary hurdle in front of ourselves. So that's the way it is very helpful to just separate out, oh, it's okay that I don't feel that way. That's sort of acknowledgement and acceptance, and then focusing on what I can do. Where it gets problematic is when people then become disconnected from their emotions because they're like, well, if I just ignore the fact that I'm sad or upset and just tell myself that I'm not sad or upset, great, then the problem won't go away. But that often just means, well, no, the problem will come out in weirder, unexpected ways. You're like, but I'm doing all the things I should be doing. And so you don't want to use the positive emotions and actions to invalidate your negative emotions and experience. But if you can accept your negative emotion and experience, say, okay, it's okay. I'm just going to focus on this part for right now. And this, like, you know, sometimes we talk about optimism and like the glass half full example. I don't really like that example because it sort of implies that, like, well, you're just, you know, they're battling against each other. Well, there's half full or half empty. What are you focusing on? Because even if the glass was 90% empty, right? That doesn't mean you don't appreciate the little sip of water that you do have. And just because you appreciate the little sip of water that you do have doesn't mean you're not frustrated that you don't have more water. You have both of those things. It's just, okay, well, which of those feelings am I going to let guide my actions? Am I going to focus on this little 10% over here? And like, oh, well, that'll help me take positive action. And then that'll do more things. I don't have to do that. Or I could, if I want, I just whine and complain and like nothing's, no one's stopping me. Oh, then I won't take action. And then that's going to send me into a downward spiral. And like, I could do that. But instead, I'm going to acknowledge these negative emotions and choose a different path. So it's really a matter of choice in the matter and agency. If you're doing that, then that's great. If you're just trying to like force yourself or ignore these negative emotions, then it can sometimes create problems.
That's fantastic. I really like your book. So even me personally, as anxiety is just wired into who I am. My dad was that way. My wife's that way. I've got a couple kids that are that way. And I think you're right. Like a big part of it is just accepting it and being okay with it. And then, and being okay with what you're feeling, but then what you do, what you choose to do, the actions you take have so much to do with how you feel after that. And so I think you, there were so many things as I read your book that I was like, wow, that's great. Or things I even realized, like, I've been doing that on my own and it actually makes a big difference in my life. So,
right. No, I think that's one of the key things too, is sometimes people don't realize all of the things that you're already doing. And oh yeah, I'm so glad I'm doing that. Oh yeah, I'm glad. It just like gives you more to appreciate right. about what you're doing and what you actually have control over and what you don't.
Well, and I think there's a mindset, and I think it's changing some, but that if you struggle with those things, then there's something wrong with you, or you can't be successful. You know, I've had a great career. I hope to continue to have a great career. I have a wonderful family and great marriage. So I can look at all those things and be like, well, there's so many great things in my life. Just because if any of our injured workers or people that we deal with are struggling with these things, they're normal. It's normal to get discouraged sometimes.
Yeah.
To feel some of those things and just accepting it.
Yeah. And I'm going to go even further than that. It's like people are like, oh, okay, well, it's not bad. That's what a lot of people, okay, it's not bad that I have these things. And I'm going to actually go further and say, it's good that you have these things.
Yeah.
Because we look at some people like, oh, that guy has no emotions and he's just always that. You wouldn't want to be that guy. Like the fact that your brain is emotional makes you more excited to play with your kids
right.
and spend time with your family and enjoy your vacations. It makes you have a better time of connecting with people and experience more joy out of that. It makes you, you know, start a podcast. You wouldn't have
right.
started a
right.
podcast. You could have just been one of those normal people who just like goes and does their work. Like, no, but the fact you have these different things that you're excited about that increases, you know, the depth of your life. It also sometimes gets in the way, sort of like, you know, does a Ferrari having a big engine, is that good or bad? Well, if you're like, oh, it's bad for the environment. Okay. Is it fun to drive? Yes. Because it's so fun to drive, am I more likely to get in an accident? Yeah, probably. Okay. So I should appreciate that it's so fun and awesome to drive. And because it's so awesome and fast, we're like, okay, then I should just be in these particular situations. I should just be more conscientious. And when you, like, this is what I really work on with my clients. So the issue is like, or the goal is being able to master your own unique neurobiology. Like, yeah, you can tweak some things or change some things here or there. You can't fundamentally change what kind of person you are, but you don't need to. And if you're the kind of person who is very intelligent and very emotional, awesome. That you have a Ferrari for a brain and stop wishing that you just had, you know, a Camry or something because it's more reliable. Instead, figure out, like, oh, how can I drive this amazing Ferrari and, you know, smoke all these other guys, you know, but also not get in an accident.
Right, right.
Nothing against reliability.
I'm offended because I drive a Camry, but Ferraris in St. Louis aren't very practical. I'm a little more practical. Right.
But also, like, he's wearing the Hawaiian shirt and you're wearing like a pullover. So like that makes sense. And like, but the key is if you have a Camry, then appreciate it for what it is. Like, great gas mileage, fits my whole family, whatever. Like, so yeah. Like, whatever your brain is, the biggest issue is when people are criticizing themselves for the brain they have instead of appreciating all the wonderful qualities as it has. And like, if it gets in the way, okay, well then just tweak some things about your biology or your life.
I love it. I love it. Well, Alex, I know we have a hard stop. I could talk to you for two more hours. You have so much to say and so much insight. I certainly encourage people to check out your book. The Spiraled Upward, I think, is the title. It's great.
The Upward Spiral.
Upward Spiral. Thank you. And the one thing I want to end on, one of the things I like to do at the end of every episode is just try to put some good vibes out in the universe. And so the question that I wanted to end with today is, if you don't mind telling me about a person that changed your life, somebody that impacted your life in a positive way, because I think, you know, we focus so much on the negative, but there's so many people doing good things in small ways that impact us and really make us who we are. And so I wondered if you could share that with us today.
Yeah. I mean, the first person that comes to mind is one of my good friends and UCLA colleagues, Dr. Billy Gordon. He unfortunately passed away a few years ago, but he was the most fascinating person I've ever met. I like to describe him as the most famous 600-pound drag queen neuroscientist you've never heard of. Like, he was in the movie Coming to America with Eddie Murphy. In the 80s, and he had a whole like career in Hollywood. Like, he lived as a woman for 20 years. I used the he pronouns because he was a man when I knew him. And like, because he just, you know, fell in love with drag and just lived as a woman for 20 years. And then when he was 40, he decided to get a PhD in neuroscience. And he went back to living as a man. And we were close friends, even though he was, you know, 27 years older than me. And we were very different in so many superficial ways. But he taught me really about how the brain actually works and how to, you know, appreciate the joy of life, even through difficult circumstances. And in his memoir, he left an unfinished memoir on his laptop that I'm trying to get published. But the basic theme of it is like, you're the only person who gets to be you. So like, sometimes, yeah, you have to do what you can in order to survive, but you get the privilege of being you. And so you might as well enjoy that, even if, you know, not every situation is ideal.
I love that. I love that. Well, Alex, I just, again, appreciate you joining us for this episode. Encourage people to check out your book. And I always like to leave our audience with our mantra to do right, think differently, and don't forget to care. And that's it for this episode. We hope you keep following us. We've been doing this for over 3 years now. Episodes release every 2 weeks on Monday, and we haven't missed one. So hope you follow us for future episodes. And with that, we'll let you guys go. Thanks, everybody.